Good afternoon, everyone. It's Dr. Niger again, our next episode of Psychology Unplugged. Thank you, as always, to all of our followers and supporters here in the United States and internationally. Look forward to doing this every week and sharing our knowledge and perspectives and information. And as I always say, we have such a diverse audience of people who listen to this program, from practitioners in the field to individuals struggling with mental health issues, or family members in relationship with individuals with mental health issues, students in the field. So as our audience has grown in diversity, I've tried my best to present things in a way that kind of is applicable to all of our audiences. And I know that the personality disorders are everybody's favorite, and I will continue to revisit those. There's not enough that can be said about it. But as always, it is a pleasure to be able to do this every week. Today's topic, I've alluded to this individual multiple times and this specific theory multiple times, and I figured why not actually do a specific episode on this. And this is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And Abraham Maslow was an American psychologist. And in 1943, he wrote a paper that was, I think, Theory of Human Motivation. And motivation is a interesting topic in and of itself. And I believe I did an episode on that a while ago. And if you break motivation down into it's two basic component parts: intrinsic motivation and extrinsic motivation. Extrinsic motivation is we engage in behaviors because we're motivated to obtain something, a paycheck, a reward. Something external is driving us. We're motivated to get up to go buy a lottery ticket because the possibility of winning has value to us. Intrinsic motivation, which I think is sometimes much more powerful, it's our own internal decision to reconcile between the choices that we make and the paths that we take. Where it's about drive, and drive is it's an abstract concept, but drive in and of itself is I'm just going to speak from a human perspective. I'm not going to speak from a sociological perspective, but human drive is something that is innate to all of us, independent of the place that we are at in life. And drive is, again, an immeasurable factor and characteristic that propels us to pursue a path, to pursue a dream, to pursue a career. And drive is something that is incredibly important in, I think, advancing or maintaining our own lives. And I could do another episode on drive theory, but it's really very similar to kind of what I'm talking about in terms of what motivates us. Are we motivated by our values and our beliefs and our decision to make changes? And the world is constantly in flux, and chaos, ironically, is necessary for order to take place. So peace and harmony is homeostasis, and that's what we try to maintain and achieve. But chaos is sometimes required in order for a system to be recalibrated, and that could take the form of, you know, ideologies and political opinions and societal views. But I think, if you know, this is sometimes slowing our own thought processes down. And you know, the thing that I ask all the patients that I see, and for those of you who follow the program, you know I primarily treat borderline personality, but one of the fundamental questions I ask, if you were to ask any of the individuals I treat, what's the one thing he always says? He says, pay attention to your motivation. Do not worry about changing your behavior, because you can't change something until you first become aware of it. But paying attention to your motivation starts to slow things down, and you'll begin to recognize patterns. Am I doing this because this is what I choose to do? That's intrinsic. Or am I choosing to do this because I will gain something out of this? Even if it's not something that you will ascertain, it could be something that you're avoiding. So that is a crucial paradigm. So if you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, he never we've conceptualized it into this pyramid shape, but he never really drew the pyramid. And there's some controversy in psychology, with Kohlberg stages, the Piaget stages of cognitive development, the different stage models, I think are very, you find these a lot in developmental psychology. But the stages are not these distinct demarcations that you pass. Like Piaget's model is very, linear. Was it zero to sensory motor, zero to three, pre-operational three to seven, concrete operational seven to 11, formal operational 12, and to adulthood. It's not that simple. And I think, from my perspective, I think we move and ebb and flow between different levels. But in Maslow's model, he was very, very specific in saying that there's basically five tiers in the hierarchy of human needs, and we can't move into the next tier until we satisfy all the needs of the current level that we're in. And current theory is not necessarily in congruence with that, we don't have to necessarily meet those specific needs. And then you get you're stamped a ticket, and then you go to the next level and they pass those needs and you go to the next level. And the highest level being self-actualization. And I'll talk about that a little bit, but self-actualization, it was thought that Jesus and Buddha were the only ones that achieved self-actualization. And I'll explain how we've kind of reconceptualize this model. So at the very basic level, Maslow described what he termed physiological needs, which is food, water, shelter, clothing, sleep. Pretty basic if you think about it, because if we don't have any of those things, especially food and water, that's not going to put us in a position where we're likely to move higher cognitively or even socially, because we are designed to do two things: survive and procreate. But no one's procreating if you're not surviving. So it makes sense at the very basic level. We have the things that need to sustain life. Shelter. We're not going to survive in Arctic temperatures without the requisite clothing. We're also, which I'm still fascinated by, is how Sir Edmund Hillary climbed Mount Everest at that time, that they could not have had the technology to sustain those temperatures. But all right, I digress into that. So food, water, shelter, clothing, and sleep. And, it's interesting sleep is put in there, because that's an area of mental health that was really under-focused. It's something under-emphasized. And I'm being a total hypocrite. I recommend to patients all the time, 90 minutes prior to bedtime, all electronic devices should be off, especially with kids and adolescents that the brain is developing until you're about 23 years of age. Sleep should be ritualistic. It should be something you look forward to. But again, this is not how my sleep pattern works. And I go to bed, and Julie and I flip the TV off, and their music's playing, and whatever. So, but sleep, food, water, air, and shelter, and clothing are necessary. And I think that makes sense. Because if we're not satisfying those basic levels, how do we move to the next level, which is safety and security? And in Maslow's model, safety and security, which is being free from fear, sound health, access to money and employment, and social stability. Now, that was where it gets a little more complicated. Free from fear. Fear, I guess my question is, fear from what? Fear from perceived danger? To live in a world where we're not, I mean, again, this is where anxiety can be, you know, can be adaptive. This is where being hypervigilant can be adaptive. But living in a world that is completely free from fear, unless maybe you're living out in the woods somewhere in a beautiful treehouse, you know, being free from fear would be great. But as we know in mental health, people walk around with fear of, you know, it could be fear of, you know, anxiety, fear of panic, you know, fear of apocalypse, fear of, you know, the wrath of God, whatever that is. Sound health, you know, maintaining, you know, good physical health and stability. Access to money and employment. Those are necessary things to be able to provide not only for yourselves, but to provide for others around you. So if you digress back to a level, food and shelter requires being able to have money to be able to pay for those things. Social stability, that now I think that's a tricky one, because in the world that we live in, my perspective is not a very stable world socially. Our world is incredibly compartmentalized, fragmented. People don't know what to believe. I think social stability is something that is very hard at this juncture in 2024 to fathom, unless you live under a rock or are completely ignorant to the realities of what is going on in the world. So sometimes people like to live in their bubble and maintain, you know, just their own little world, and I guess if that's the choice that you wanted, that gives you social, you know, stability and security. Maybe that's more of an individualistic thing versus a collective thing in terms of, you know, more Jungian, the collective unconscious, which is a different concept in and of itself. So I'm not going to talk about that during this. All right. So after safety and security is love and belonging, a sense of connection, friendship, family, intimacy, ability to share. Now, this is a unique human experience, I think. This is where, you know, human connectedness, human relationships, our ability to care for ourselves and care for our loved ones, our ability to have friendships and be able to turn to people when we're down, and for those people to turn to us when they're down or need our help. Ability to share, our ability to be lenders and not borrowers. And then even if you're spiritual, that's, you know, that's biblical, that, you know, God, you know, says your goal is to be lenders, not borrowers. But a sense of connection, now this may not apply to somebody with, you know, a specific psychiatric condition like antisocial personality disorder or schizoid or schizotypal, but, you know, you have to look at those as anomalies. But, you know, love and belonging, I think, is fundamental, and it's a desire. And sometimes how people go about pursuing love and belonging can be pathological in terms of, if you look at like borderline personality disorder, for example, that could be problematic how an individual seeks love and a sense of belonging. But there are also individuals that I think are perfectly happy living as loners and living by themselves. But I do believe at a fundamental level that there is something inside of us that desires nurturance and acceptance. And maybe because the world has been cruel, people have turned a jaundiced eye and have decided to become disenfranchised and disconnected from the greater sense of society. But that's love and belonging. So we've gone from physiological needs to safety and security, to love and belonging, to the fourth stage being self-esteem. And this is about confidence, a sense of competence, and a freedom to of expression to that of our own unique views and needs and feelings, and respect for the self and others. Now, you can see it at the fourth level. This is a much higher level of operational thinking and feeling and behaving than simply being a hunter and gatherer at the most basic level of physiological needs. And the self is something that is mysterious. It is something that is incredibly fragile. The self is very, very fragile. And, you know, I've seen this in work, and I've seen this in our own lives. Like, you know, if somebody gave me 50 compliments in one day and someone says something negative, I'm going to negate the 50 and remember the one. And I don't know a name for that. I don't know why that is. But I think we almost have a tendency to try to confirm the negative parts of ourselves. Take grandiosity out of it. Take, you know, the euphoria associated with a manic episode or hypomanic episode or narcissism. But you know, self-esteem and being a hierarchy of need, a need to be able to share our ideas. That is how we advance society. That is how we advance ourselves. And dissension in ideas is healthy. It, you know, when it borders on, you know, brutality and things that are inhumane, there's really no justification for those things. But dissent is how we, I think, have evolved and how new ideas have come into existence. And, you know, we are part and parcel of this process of change. But confidence is something that is lacking in a lot of individuals. And, you know, confidence is not cockiness. Confidence is a belief that, you know, I believe in this and this and this, but I'm open to entertaining. I'm open to discussing your views. And even if I disagree with you, that's okay. And I think it becomes one of the things I think that people fear the most is what they've believed and what they've been taught and what they've come to know in terms of how they operate their lives and their world and they raise their children and how they go to work every day and go to church and live their lives. I think the scariest things is what if what they believed and have been taught it was wrong. And I could tell you this from my work and being in the mental health field and working with people that, you know, part of cognitive therapy is changing belief systems that are irrational and that impact the sense of self and then impact how people will navigate the love and belonging and the safety, the security, and the physiological needs. And this is where I'm talking about how my view of the model is you're moving back and forth between interwoven parts. And maybe I think Maslow's model is this pure, you know, pure in the sense of not factoring in mental health. But when you factor in mental health, navigating these different needs or meeting these needs can definitely go from a state of what's adaptive or acceptable to certainly maladaptive and border on the verge of psychopathology. But self-esteem and confidence and competence is crucial and feeling that and feeling a sense of that. And again, there's a difference between being confident and being boastful. And there's a difference between being confident and being prideful. But being having confidence is something that's very important in you know, working with individuals from a psychotherapeutic standpoint, that yes, if you put the work in, you can overcome the vast majority of psychiatric conditions, or if not overcome, at least effectively manage them. Like schizophrenia is something that is neurochemical. You're not going to overcome that, but you can, with effort and confidence and belief in yourself and belief in your providers and belief in the mental health system, that you can overcome certain things. So again, I do not believe Maslow factored in mental health as anomalies in his original ideology of what the hierarchy of needs is. And the highest level, like I said, is self-actualization. And this is where we experience a sense of purpose, an ability to access inner potential, deeper meaning, acceptance, spirituality, creativity, a sense of morality, and transcendence. transcendence across all dimensions of the human experience. And that's why they said Jesus and Buddha were able to have this state of heightened enlightenment. And enlightenment is again, in Maslow's model, is this highest level. But I think we've redefined the model that you can be self-actualized in multiple areas and in different areas. They can be self-actualized in music, self-actualized as a parent, self-actualized as a teacher, self-actualized as just a member of society. That is not a state you get to, then you're done. But I think, you know, a newer look at this model is these are stages to get to where it's, okay, I've self-actualized here. Now what? And now what? And now what? And now what? And that's the beauty. But, you know, experiencing a sense of purpose and ability to access our inner potential and deeper meaning. And this is, again, very, you know, a very strict dichotomy, you know, versus the basic level of I need food, water, air, and shelter and sleep, you know, to feeling a sense of being empowered and experience a sense of purpose and spontaneity and creativity and you know, morality. And these, I think these stages in and of themselves, there's no, these really don't have like ages associated with, whereas Piaget's model does, and Kohlberg, I think his model of moral development does. Erikson's stages of psychosocial development, I think that has ages with it. But Maslow's model really doesn't have age. And it's, I guess if you look at it, it's a journey. It's a journey that is completely ours. And is it easy for some people? Sure, depending on where they live and the resources that they have. Is it more difficult than other people? Absolutely. Again, depending on where you live, the resources that you have. But nowhere is it written that people say you can't. And, you know, I don't think Maslow or nor myself is selling a false notion of hope. But I'm also saying, you know, the ride is not always easy. And just because we see it, and this is, I think, sometimes where social media becomes, you know, very problematic, is when you post picturesque movies and videos and photographs of an idyllic world, you know, a utopia, that, and you compare your life to that, that's not reality. And, you know, again, this being an individualized experience, we all move through these. And we all have choices. That's the beauty of being human. We always have choices. And I've said this before, depending where we are in our life, we may not always like the choices we have available to us, but you are never without a choice. And that is incredibly powerful. It is incredibly powerful. And if you make a certain choice, the outcome may be painful for a while. And you have to accept that. You know, we can't have everything we want without, you know, going through difficulty. That's just not how the world works. But, you know, to regress into a state of just safety and security and living at that basic level, yes, I'm sure there are people that do that. But, you know, I think unlocking the human potential is something that's, I think, part of, you know, psychotherapy, not turning everybody into an existential thinker, but helping them realize you got a lot more than you think you do. Because when you're depressed, you don't think you have much. And if you're constantly in psychological survival mode, like borderline personality, you think the world is a scary and hostile and dangerous place. And I'm not expressing my opinions because what if somebody doesn't like me? You know, those are those fears. Are, you know, they're real and they're idiosyncratic to specific individuals. And, you know, transcendence and you know, feeling a sense of accomplishment, feeling a sense of autonomy, and feeling a sense of connectedness and creativeness, that is a, you know, wonderful part of the human experience. And you know, I think Maslow's theory has a lot of credibility. It's used a lot in mental health, it's used in higher education, it's used, you know, in employment settings. You know, how does an individual think and how do they navigate, you know, through the world? Julie, you want to add? You like to talk about this stuff. All right.
No, I'm good for today.
All right, you're good for today? All right, so Julie's good for today. But I at least wanted to take this opportunity to present a model that I have referred to multiple times and at least explain it from, you know, Maslow's perspective and then my perspective, factoring in what I don't think he did was the impact of mental health on moving through these different stages. But we all have unlocked potential. We all have fears. We all have pain. We all have scars. We all have bruises. We all have wishes. We all have dreams. We all have hopes. We all have disappointments. And that's where motivation comes in. And that is strictly yours. And that is in drive. That is strictly yours and ours. And, you know, moving through a murky world and realizing the power of the human condition in, you know, back to, you know, Viktor Frankl on the episode I did on self-actualization of finding, you know, meaning in the head of a fish in Auschwitz. It's, again, it doesn't mean it's always going to be the most comfortable environment, but you have much more resolve and ability in you than you give yourselves credit for. And I've seen this, and I see this every day working in mental health. So hopefully this was helpful. Feel free, until next time, feel free to reach out to me at psychologyunplugged.outlook.com. You can hold me through Psychology Today. You can follow us on Instagram at psychology_unplugged_. And you can even contact me directly in the United States, 617-750-9411, East Coast Standard Time. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, be well, and I will talk to you guys. Bye.